Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you this evening to the Tuesday, August 25th, 2015 City Council meeting. And at this time, I would like to call the meeting to order. The invocation tonight will be done by Josh Vaughn of the Blessing of Nations Church and the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Fast. Would you please stand?
Let's bow our heads. Father, we come before you today in gratefulness for our wonderful country. Father, we ask your blessings upon the leaders. We ask you for your wisdom. And as Benjamin Franklin declared to the delegates at the Constitutional Convention, unless the Lord build a house, they who labor, labor in vain. Help us not to labor in vain tonight, Lord, but for your wisdom to flow through each and every one of our elected officials. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Please join our council in the flag salute. Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Betancourt.
Here.
Councilmember Beck.
Here.
Councilmember Fast.
Here.
Councilmember Rodriguez.
Here.
Mayor Cellino.
Yes. Agenda approval. Are there any additions or deletions tonight?
There are none, Mayor.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Fast.
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez.
Yes.
Mayor Cellino.
Yes. Well, tonight we have two presentations, and the first is a presentation for the 13-year-old Babe Ruth All-Star Champions. Okay? So what we're going to be doing is I'm going to give a little presentation, a little history of what they've gone through, and then I'll have Councilman Rodriguez help me with the presentation of the certificates for the individuals. All right. So let me have a little bit of say-so here. These kids here have gone through what? Minor league, little league, Babe Ruth, and hopefully high school, okay, in the future. But what these kids have done, here's what they've done. In the regular league, they played for different teams. And then at the end of the league, they're chosen to participate in the All-Star tryouts. And these are the selection of the players for the All-Stars for the 13-year-olds. And once they did that, they were chosen to go to a district tournament, which is district number 3 in the Babe Ruth. And they became champions. And once they won the district tournament, then they went. They were qualified to go to the state. Mm-hmm. So in July 14th, 13, the 13s went to the state tournament in Lompoc. Mm-hmm. And they played against different teams. They won all four games at that state level. And the last game was against Lompoc, who was the hostess, and they won 13-11. Mm-hmm. If I'm wrong, coaches, let me know, okay? And by doing that, they qualified to go to the regionals. Mm. And that regionals was held in Fresno. And the first game for the regionals was in July, they played against Hawaii, the first game in the regionals. Fortunately, they lost 9-7. They had to come back to play to win the next two games to continue. Well, the next game, on the 28th, they played Tule, Utah. And that game was 12-2. So they kind of had a good time there. Then the next game on the, I believe it was following that same day they played, right? Yeah. They played against Torrance and for the final game, and they lost 8-6. Now, every game that they played was very, very close, except for the Tule, Utah game. So, gentlemen, you guys did a great job in that one. So, and just one other thing. These kids here, 9 out of the 14, In 2013, they were, and this is in the Little League, they were the championship team for the 10 and 11-year-olds All-Star. Mm. 9 out of 14. Congratulations. Mm. So tonight, what we're going to be doing is I'm going to have Councilman Rodriguez help me in presentation of the certificates that are going to be presented tonight to you folks. And so as they're read, we come up one by one and line up here in front to congratulate you folks. And at the end, we're going to go ahead and present the coaches their certificates for a job well done this year. Mm-hmm. So if we can get that started, and I'll have Mr. Rodriguez come with me. And we'll start off with Roman Rosales. Isaac Guzman. Bradley Lovewell.
Congratulations.
Devin Decker.
Congratulations.
Great job.
Roger Ortiz.
Congratulations.
Good job.
Oh. Ryan Garza.
Robert, way to go, buddy.
And I hope I have this right. Jacob Gagnon. Gavin Brown. Gavin Gabaldon. Nicholas Torres. Jacob Franco. Kyle Doy. Alex Garcia. Joshua Leal. And at this time we'd like to have the coaches come in, because without the guidance of these kids, they wouldn't have achieved this much. So I'd like to call Jordan Urbano, head coach. Cameron Rhodes. And Andres Cristobal. And on behalf of the City Council, we thank you very much. So at this time, what I'd like to do is ask any coach that would like to say any comments about their season. Microphone is open.
Hello, my name is Jordan Urbano. This season, wow. Long, exciting season, mm-hmm. One traded for the world. These kids did some things that no other team has done as far as really Babe Ruth, ever in the history of really Babe Ruth. Mm. And they did a well done job. Everyone gave 100%. We preached a concept, me and the coaches early on, family, and they grasped onto that. in a way that I've never ever seen another team do before. Very proud of these boys. I would also like to thank my two coaches. Awesome. Wouldn't trade them for the world. You know, a lot of hard work went into this preparation for both tournaments. I don't think people quite understand what these boys have done. But they went through 2 days, 100 degree heat, if not more. Mm-hmm. We beat them up pretty good, but they they accepted the challenge and they went out and represented this town in an outstanding way. Very proud of these kids, very proud of the coaches, very proud of the community. Thank you all.
I just want to mention two other things. I think it's really special the way that our team's families and parents were able to come together. And, you know, I know that these boys have been playing baseball for a number of years. But you're always going to have new faces added to rosters. And I thought it was really special that when we were down in Lompoc that we were able to sit and barbecue and enjoy each other's company and have our kids hanging out and swimming and just enjoying life together. I think it's something really special that, you know, we'll continue to remember for the rest of our lives. I know I won't forget it. And just with that being said, the amount of support that the community gave to us, we couldn't have got it done without Reedley, the city of Reedley, without the businesses that donated, the individual donors. You guys really stepped up and helped us take care of things and provide for these boys. I mean, we had all the meals covered. We had their hotel rooms covered. It's really special when you can have the backing of your town support in an endeavor like this. And I think they really represented really well. So I just want to say thank you to everybody that was a part of this. And the journey continues next year.
My name is Andres Cristobal. Just adding on to both coaches what they already said from the get-go. I mean, I've been coaching for a while, but I mean, to coach an all-star team like this, it's a different atmosphere. I was, you know, timid that, you know, these guys weren't gonna need any of my help. And, you know, it's every single kid had a piece of that journey that made it happen, whether it was coming in and relieving, you know, saying a prayer and taking initiative and doing prayer before and after the games, which we always did, and we preached family, and that's important. Parents, you guys are awesome. You guys are part of our family, and even my daughter, my little 8-year-old, she tagged along as well. But I told the kids already this. Doesn't end right here. Next year, I think Tri-Valley is gonna know who Reedley is. So, you know, as working for the school district, I already told you guys I'm gonna keep an eye on you guys, your grades. I have all the access. So, you know, we're gonna be students first, and athletes second. Thank you, City of Reedley.
Again, on behalf of the city of Reedley, congratulations. And I invite you to shake the staff's hand as you walk out. Great job done. Thank you, Jeff.
Congratulations.
Very nice.
Good job. My boys played Little League. Thank you, too. You know what it's all about.
Congratulations.
It's great.
All right.
Good job, bud. Good job.
Congratulations. All right. We'll see you guys in next year in Babe Ruth again.
It's a good-looking team, too, you know.
All right. You know.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Good job. Good luck next year.
Good job.
Good job.
Congratulations. Again.
Good job.
Congrats. All right, guys.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
It's a lot of hard work.
Good
you guys put a lot
yes,
into
good
it.
Good job. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good job.
Rose, again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Your work. Cameron.
Coach, thank you again. All right.
folks hire you. Thank you. And I appreciate your words. They should watch over them.
Good job.
Yours.
They need that.
Hey, congratulations.
Congratulations. So proud. So your grandpa, hi. He was my boy's baseball
coach. Hey, congratulations again.
Hey, congratulations.
I didn't know if I could do all of them.
Hey, Mr. Gucci. All right. Good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was great. Great news.
Hey.
You folks that wasn't mentioned before every game, these boys you knelt down.
It was mentioned.
His grandson.
It was mentioned.
Yeah. All
right. Thank you, Ralph.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very cool. Good.
Listen, prayer,
you take care.
See you again.
Prayer before every game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's good. These kids can recognize another community.
Is it my imagination?
Warm?
Yeah, isn't it warm to you guys?
With all the bodies, I
maybe,
think.
Maybe when the bodies
well,
don't.
Well, according to the agenda, we shouldn't be here very long.
Chief. Make it happen.
Rick, thank you, huh?
Well, you're welcome. No. It's all of us working together.
You're welcome.
Hey, my son got those two tickets to go to the Giants game.
Good night. Good night, folks.
My grandson. On the lottery? They went to the game and they took him down to the field. That was neat. Yeah.
Well, folks, I guess we can get started. Under public comment, provide an opportunity.
Number two.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got so excited about the first one.
Still flying high on that one, Ray.
Introduction of Parks and Recreation Youth Representatives Community Service. Mrs. Reed?
Good evening, Mayor and members of the Council. Sarah Reed, Community Services Superintendent. In 2011, the position of the Youth Rep to the Parks and Recreation Commission was developed. Since that time, I have had the pleasure of working with many incredible high school students. I work very closely with the Youth Reps and appreciate the support our department receives from them. The Youth Reps actively participate in our programs, recruit volunteers to support our programs, and contribute to the Commission's topics of discussion. Over the past few years, this position has become very competitive, with many applicants applying. I feel this competitiveness has supported the integrity of this position and the students' desires to obtain it. I expect the same level of professionalism from the youth reps that have been appointed for this upcoming year. Lauren Tavlon was unable to make it tonight. One thing we found with our youth reps are they are very busy in our communities. They are people that are go-getters, part of leadership, part of all the school clubs, and she is part of band. And so she was unable to be here. But I'm excited to introduce Selena Garcia, who is right behind me. And I have asked her to share with you a little information about herself and what she hopes to obtain from this experience. So, Selena.
Hello, my name is Selena Garcia, and I'm a junior in high school this year. I'm very, very grateful for this position and very excited. I'm really excited for the community service events I get to participate in, like participating at the TL Reed After School program, just working with the little kids. And I hope to encourage others to participate more in our community and just to help out, because I just love the community feel of things. And just, I'm really excited to get more and more involved and encourage others to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Going on public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council jurisdiction and which are not on agenda this evening. It's a policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue would be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the Council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, going to the consent agenda. Items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under the consent agenda category, a recommended course of action is for each item is made. Any council member may remove an item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinance, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. So would any council member wish to remove an item from the consent agenda?
I'd like to remove item number 4 and item number 8, please.
I'll make a motion to approve the rest.
All right. It's been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going back to the items, item number 4, approval of and authorize the city manager to sign a worksite agreement with Protus for the temporary jobs program for drought impact workers through June 30th, 2016. Administrative Services, Mr. Malikian.
Good evening, Council. I'm available for any questions on the item.
I was just a little bit confused in we're contracting with Protus, but yet Protus is not the person that's paying the employees that we're going to have. Can you tell me a little bit more about that process?
Sure. Yeah, we're basically working off information that's given to us directly by Protus. This is a national grant that's funneled through the state agency of the Employment Development Department, and they then use these regional entities to disperse and get the money into the communities. So there's two different I call them cooperatives, but they're groups that represent migrant farm workers, and so they have agreements with the state to disperse these grant funds, but these agencies don't have the expertise and the network to find the people and get them trained and out into the workforce.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
It's very complicated. I had a little bit of difficulty with it as well because I like to fully understand things too. But that said, it's a very short program, so we're really wanting to jump on the funds right away and get folks out there in the field doing different types of maintenance work and that sort of thing. So.
Okay, I had one more question on the actual agreement, the worksite agreement. I found it interesting. On item number 16 on the back page, it talks about overtime, and it says, please note that overtime will be allowed under any circumstances.
Right. This was a boilerplate agreement given to us by Protus, and we did ask them about that. So as far as clarification, they are allowing the folks that they're sending to us to work overtime if there's a business need for it.
Okay.
We're not planning on it per se, but if there is a case where we do need the extra hours, it will be allowed. We just need to let them know in advance if possible. But right, that was a little bit of a,
that's a pretty kind of open-ended
statement.
Yeah.
I think it's the way the grant is set up is there's a certain amount of funding available, and it's first come, first serve. So Protus jumped on this, and they wanted to get all of their contacts to get as many people in the local area working as possible before other areas of the state started to use these funds. That's the way I understand it. So actually what they're trying to do is place people who live in the area, specifically Reedley and the surrounding areas, to work for the city. So that's kind of a neat thing because then they're not having to travel real far to get to work.
Well, and another advantage, too, is you're getting some job work experience out of these people to see if they might be a good worker for us as a city down the road. So that's great.
That's all we're looking at, too.
Thank you. That's the only questions I have.
Paul, besides Protus, this other one that's paid by La Cooperativa Campesina de California. Is that an organization that has been in place for quite some time?
I understand that they've been, it's a statewide association of agencies implementing and administering farm worker service programs. So prior to this program, I had never heard of the agency, but they, I did go to the website, and it appears they've been in place for quite a number of years.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. So, but right. Other than that, I don't have a lot of information about that entity.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Any other questions of staff? Seeing none, any public comment on this one? Seeing none, call for the question.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going into item number 8. Adopt resolution 2015-088 outlining compensation and reimbursement of practice for the full-time career firefighters participating in the mutual aid activities for the state of California and federal fire agencies. Fire Chief Isaac.
Good evening.
A couple of questions that I had, actually probably just one. What were the rates of pay that were on the agreement? I didn't see any rates of pay in any of this.
The California Fire Assistant Agreement establishes base pay rates for firefighters. And for overhead personnel, which is a chief officer, being a battalion chief, mm-hmm. assistant chief, division chief, a fire chief, those rates are actual rates based upon their actual pay. The firefighters.
Okay, but we have volunteers, so how does that
the
work?
The volunteers are paid a base rate that has been established by the CFAA agreement, and that is $28.42 an hour.
And the chief and battalion chief rate?
Those rates are whatever our pay rate here is at
oh,
the state.
Okay, as a full-time, okay.
Yes.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions, staff? No. Any public comment? Seeing none, do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going into item number 9, introduction of first reading of ordinance number 2015-004, adding chapter 4 to title 9 of the Reading Municipal Code relating to the speeded permitting procedures for small residential rooftop solar systems, and adding section 915 to chapter 1 of title 9 pertaining to underground services art. Community service, community development. Mr. Fabino.
Mr. Mayor, members of the commission, council, sorry. Kevin Fabino, community development director. I'm going to turn the presentation over to Caitlin Underwood. She actually was before you some time ago as we introduced her as a new employee, and I think you'll be quite impressed with her presentation. She's really here tonight. I'm going to kind of steal a little bit of her thunder. She's done a phenomenal job. One of the reasons we're here is because of the huge influx of commercial and residential solar systems that are going up residentially on residential homes. Is so much so that we've actually had to change our business practice to be able to keep up with them. She's done a phenomenal job, and I just wanted to give her praise for that, as well as she'll be talking to you about the 811 program.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Thanks for having me here tonight. So what you have before you tonight is the first reading of Ordinance 2015-004, which proposes to add Chapter 4, Title 9, relating to expedited permitting procedures for small residential rooftop solar systems to the Reedley Municipal Code, and also to add Section 9-1-5 relating to underground services alerts to the Reedley Municipal Code.
Just go beep.
Okay, so we can actually move to the next slide. Next one, yeah. This ordinance is stemming from a government code section that states the policy of the state of California is to promote and encourage the installation and use of solar energy systems by limiting obstacles to their use and minimizing permitting costs. That section further elaborates by requiring every city and county to adopt an ordinance creating expedited permitting processes for small residential rooftop solar systems by September 30th of 2015.
So this is a state mandate, right?
This is a state mandate. This is something that the city is being required to do. It's something that we're happy to do because we're already by practice in compliance with it. This is just the formality of getting it adopted into the code. This is not going to change our current practices at all. We've already adjusted to the influx of the solar permits. This just puts it in writing that we do actually have that practice and comply with the government code section. Right, as it stands right now, the maximum time we take to review and issue a solar permit for a small residential rooftop system is 5 business days. We are also able to accept those plans and permit applications either over the counter or through email or fax. We do then, if we do accept it electronically, we do have to print it, and that goes on the building permit to the contractor to recuperate those costs. So it, again, no fiscal impact on this one. The city just needs to adopt the ordinance, as I said, to be in full compliance. My clicker works now. Thanks. So this is just a little info, a couple little blurbs on our building permits as they stand now. Since January 1st, the building department has actually issued 384 building permits. That was as of 5 o'clock today. We do have many more in plan check and in processing. That 384 is just what has been issued. Out of that 384, 148 permits were for these small residential rooftop solar systems. That's roughly 40% of all building permits issued this year. And it's a huge part of what we do in the building division right now. And as Kevin mentioned, we've had to restructure how we work in the building division now. So in doing that, the solar has kind of been shifted over to my desk, and I've got to have some fun learning how to plan check all residential solar systems and issue the permits on my own. So that frees up Gary to do all of our larger plan checks for the projects that we've been having come in, which has been great also.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
And I've heard so much about solar. Mm-hmm. Now, the city is doing this. Now, when a person comes in and applies for one of these, are they leasing it or are they buying it?
When we receive these applications, we're not usually privy to the information of how they're financing them. I am aware of several options that the contractors offer these homeowners. There are leasing options through several large contractors that do the majority of the business. And the HERO program and the PACE programs that we introduced to you, I think, last year, mm-hmm. those are actually an option for owners to finance these mm-hmm. and own them. So mm-hmm. there are different options, and it just depends on which program you go through. And you can go through, there's so many contractors now that the market has gotten really competitive with them as well.
And there's in my neighborhood, there was about a week or so ago, there was some going around to each home and presenting a solar system. Mm-hmm. And then I come to find out that some of these people that are hooking up to these, and these are just leasing it, not mm-hmm. buying it.
Right.
Because if you buy it, then you get the rebate.
Right.
Without it, you've got a, you can buy, but it's going to cost you some big bucks if you want to buy it later on. But what's happening is that some of these people find out that they're not hooked on to PG&E for some reason. And some have waited months and months to get hooked up to get that credit or to get that lower bill. And so that's one of the customers that I was explaining to him about this program. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that has talked to individuals that some are very upset because they have not been hooked onto it. So I just thought I'd bring it up.
That's interesting. I don't know if it does take PG&E to log it through their system and to energize the system as solar, but I hadn't heard that there was a backlog with PG&E. I don't know if you had.
Yes, I have heard that there is somewhat of a backlog. I don't know whether that is weeks or months. That's something we could make contact and kind of find out, just as an FYI.
Oh, handy. We have PG&E in the room. Well, gee.
I'll get to it and get back to Nicole.
Okay.
And the individual I talked to was saying, according to some of the people that they talked to, was months before they got hooked on.
Really?
Yes.
We'll get some information from PG&E, but if the increase in solar permits of Reedley if it's similar anywhere else, I can see why there would be a little bit of a backlog, right? Because this has really been something that has increased hand over fist lately. It's hard to keep up with it. So.
And the other question was, if you lease it, and then if you sell your home, what happens with the next buyer that doesn't want that solar?
I believe, from what I've been told with our contractors, and I don't know all the details, but when you have a system that is leased, the new owner would have the option of continuing the lease or not. And then as I've heard different things with options for owning the system, with the HERO program, you do own it, but it's attached to your property. So were you to sell it, it would stay at that home and the new homeowner would also own that system. With other options, there may be an availability for systems that you own to be transferred to a new residence. I think from what I've been told with the contractors that I work with regularly, that these are all options that they get when discussing contracts, and it's something they agree to on a case-by-case basis. So there's just a lot of options that they have.
Interesting.
Now.
Mm-hmm. You kind of wonder if all the companies are different or the same.
There are some that are different. There are some that would prefer to lease and some that do both, and some you can only purchase from.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
So with the HERO program, like you're saying, so that option is to, they're buying the system.
Correct, yes.
So now if that person is selling their home, or they lose their home, or something unfortunate happens within the family and they need to move out or what have you, so then the people that are interested in buying that house, they would have to, it's with the understanding that they're hooked up to solar. Through the HERO program?
Through the HERO program specifically, they say the system is attached to the property, so it would remain in place as is for the new owner.
So yes. they would be buying it with the understanding they're solar?
Correct.
Yeah. I think that's like a lien against the property.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
And then with the other program where they're not buying it, they're leasing it.
Right.
Then, to your knowledge, the contract, that means that, again, if they're selling that home, the interested buyer would have the option of, yes, I want solar, or no, remove it.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay.
Is there any other questions on the solar portion? I'm going to move into the underground services alert section of the presentation.
I just find your information about how many permits versus how many total permits we had, and almost half of them were solar.
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot. And I can see where PG&E would be having conniptions because, that's a lot of people to transfer over, and that's just one city.
Yeah, it is. I think everybody's staying busy with it.
Yeah.
This year?
So the next portion of this ordinance is for underground services alerts. Underground Service Alert North is a free service for homeowners, excavators, and professional contractors who are digging, grading, drilling, or excavating. This service, in California, it is mandatory for those excavating to utilize this service to call USA North at least 2 working days before, but not more than 14 days before you dig. Adding this section to the Reedley Municipal Code implements a procedure that requires responsible parties to comply with that requirement. This is an additional safeguard for our community. It's an effort to have in our code and remind everybody what steps need to be taken prior to commencing any sort of excavation or earth moving, digging. We would like to protect any of the people working in our city and living in our city and working in our city in any way that we can. So this just puts it in writing in our code that we require this. This is a mandate. And actually, I did want to bring up a recent event that we had on a construction site in town. The contractor did everything they were supposed to, They called 811, had all the lines marked, had a employee of the gas company on site watching them to daylight this pipe that they were looking for, and they were working slowly. They found an unexpected 2-inch gas line and broke it.
Yeah.
So we had a pretty good gas leak on our hands. But there was a gas company employee there already who immediately activated the team that needed to come out to the site and get that secured, repaired. And because of that, there were no injuries. The repair was fixed as quickly as possible, and any third parties involved in that site were free of liability.
Really?
So it's a good protection for everybody as well. I mean, outside of safety, had you not called and you broke that line, that cost then transfers down to whoever broke it, or even the agency that didn't check to see whether they had called. Or so that's something that we look for on every site too, is the city checks. Have you called the USA? Have you marked your lines? So I just wanted to show that that's the kind of thing that calling this number does. It really can prevent a big disaster. And that brings me to our next slides, which are some photos of something that happened without calling 811. This occurred in the Midwest, I believe. This was a farmer with two helpers who went out in the middle of his field, decided to drill some holes for some fence posts, and hit a cross-country gas line that he didn't know was there. It's a pretty big crater. You can see in scale with the two gentlemen standing next to it how large it is. And our next one is, this is the devastation of that area. That's the damage. And if you notice, there is two homes that were completely decimated. So all of which could have possibly been prevented had they dialed the number.
Mm-hmm.
So this concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, please. Please feel free.
I don't have a question, but I had, and maybe you folks are already ahead of the curve here, like they say, but this is real significant, this piece on this ordinance.
Right.
And you know, in reference to, like you're saying, providing the utmost safety that we can for the community of those people working on a particular project. My thoughts on this when I read it is that, and like I said, maybe the staff is already planning, but the communication of this ordinance, mm-hmm. the significance of it, and how they need to comply.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about those folks that are non-English speakers.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get on our webpage. They're not going to understand
right.
if when we have it there. So I'm hoping that, and staff always does an excellent job with that, but that we get that piece, you know, in writing for our Spanish-speaking community.
Absolutely.
Because I think it's real important. These guys just start digging.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had and the reason I said that, I had an incident not too far from us a couple months ago, and basically they didn't call 811.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody got out there. Of course, it was county, but, I mean, everybody got out there, and I'm just thinking, well, again, you know, Spanish-speaking folks not knowing, you know, the ordinance and not knowing how to access that. So for me, this is good. I mean, I'm not.
You know, Mr. Rodriguez, you bring up an excellent point. I know that PG&E and Southern California Gas, this is Erica, if you could stand up and come to the podium for a minute. This is probably their biggest push right now, and it's stemming from the CPUC and what happened in San Bruno, yeah. Thank you. I think Mr. Rodriguez brings up an excellent question about the marketing and the communication, particularly outreach to non-English speaking residents. So PG&E and Southern California Gas are actually the ones that are pushing it and communicating out. Well, do you know what they're doing?
Absolutely. I know, for instance, in Madera, we have a multicultural outreach coordinator that works with all Spanish media markets. And so she held an informational table that was geared towards the Spanish contracting community to let them know about 811 and what was being done and how we can educate them and, you know, what is the process. So we are definitely, from PG&E's standpoint, making the effort to make sure that we're crossing all lines of communication so that everyone knows, because it is a safety issue, and it keeps, you know, city employees, utility workers, and residents safe to make sure that we are calling 811. And I really do want to commend the city of Reedley, because you are one of the first municipalities moving forward. I know you adopted a resolution or a proclamation back in April, but to really put it on the books as an ordinance, we are very thankful.
And I know that I mentioned this before, but I know for a fact, like Radio Bilingue 91.5, they'll put out announcements such as this that are significant.
And so what I can do...
At no charge. I mean, they're going to do it.
Absolutely.
And a lot of Spanish-speaking community will listen to that station here in Reedley.
Right.
Orange Cove, Parlier, Dinuba, Salma, and stuff like that. So anything we can do to get them, you know, access them so they can carry the message. Because, again, it's all about safety, like what you pointed out.
Right.
Safety for
so
our community.
So, you know, what I'll do is I will look at the previous issue that was mentioned regarding the rooftop and the connection, and I'll also look to see what our multicultural outreach has been and give Nicole an update so that it can be shared with you.
And I apologize, I should have done a better introduction. This is Erica Cabrera, who is with PG&E. She may look very familiar to you because until very recently, she was with Assemblymember Perea's office and then made the jump, and she's now our PG&E rep. So we're glad to have her here.
Good. That's great.
Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. I have a question, if I can ask staff. And I'm only concerned about the centralized part of the city of Reedley. That's the old section. Does a city, do we have maps and that tells us where all our lines are in this community? Because like with Dinuba, on El Monte, doing that road, which took an awful long time, and they found lines that they weren't even in their maps.
Yeah.
That's my concern. Do we have that, would we have that problem in the middle of the city, really?
We have a very good history of our sewer, our water lines, and our storm drain lines. We do not have other than on as-built plans, records of gas lines and electric lines that may have been undergrounded. We have some information, but because of that, we always check with 811 first before we do any design work, even if we can.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they don't like to come out and do any digging if we're just doing design, only when we're about to dig. So that's something that I would push for so that we know ahead of time what's out there when we're doing our design, and we can plan for it better than having it happen in construction. But as far as our infrastructure, we have very good records. As far as the other utilities, we do rely on 811 for what we don't know.
Okay.
And frankly, because technology has changed over the years, it was only in recent memory that all of these things have been put on computers, and so you're relying on people back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s to have made good, accurate maps and notes and push that forward. So my guess is we will always have lines that we're unaware of. Particularly, we run into instances all the time where people have not pulled building permits, they've made alterations to their properties, and there's just no way we can get records of those. We experienced that when they tore down the old Granger building and the water line that came out of nowhere and ended nowhere. And we've always have a little bit of that, but as our city engineer mentioned, even the city calls 811 before we do anything because we're not privy to the gas lines and electric lines. That's proprietary information. So we call ourselves when we're gonna do work.
Would it be possible if, such as what you pointed out, Nicole, it's like we're not aware of a lot of the work that has been done. When people do it on the weekend, they put in their own lines, electrical lines sometimes because they want to hook stuff up. And this, I wonder if it would be beneficial that how we do it, I don't know, but to communicate with the community and inquire, hey, if there's something that's been done to this property that you know of that can create an issue, could communicate with staff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I guess impressing upon them that you're not going to get penalized. Because if they go like, well, wait a minute, you're asking me to divulge something, are you going to come after me? I'd rather have them divulge it and say like, hey, we put a gas line in here, or when we moved in here, somebody told me that they put a gas line or they did some electrical. There's a lot of electrical work I know that's been done in this community without permits.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been pulled. So only the people that live there know that those lines are underground. Once those people sell, then again, the 811, are they supposed to call if they're digging in their backyard? Yes. They are, huh?
Absolutely.
So, but what are the chances, I guess, in my mind, what are the chances of someone calling?
What are the chances?
Or something like, you know, like, why would I call? I have no knowledge of someone laying a line here. Or if I call, if I do have knowledge, if I call, am I going to get penalized?
Well, for 811, certainly it's a free service, and they won't be penalized if something is found that's not on a map at all. I actually can't sit here and say that somebody wouldn't be penalized if they called in to say, we know of a, or we moved this electric line, or because PG&E may penalize them. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, we have to, if we know about something, we have to send Gary out to inspect it after, even sometimes after the fact. But certainly from the standpoint of 811, we do need to get the message out there that it's a free service and there's no penalty whatsoever. And we're not looking at what's on the map versus what's off the map so much as we just want to mark it so it's not hit.
And I think that's well said. And I think that's the message that I would want out there. Again, talking to the Spanish-speaking community, like, this is in your interest, man, for your safety and your family and the community.
Yeah.
It's not to go after you.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll work with PG&E and see what we can do specific to our community. I really like that idea of working with the contractors, particularly the Spanish-speaking contractors as well. That's an excellent idea. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions of staff? See none. This is a public hearing. I'll open the public hearing now. Is there any public comments on this? See none. I'll close the public hearing. Turn it back to the council. For your wishes?
Make a motion to approve item number 9.
I'll second it.
The mood and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Ms. Underwood, thank you very much for your presentation. All right. And that's it. We'll go into council reports, and I'll start off with Mr. Rodriguez.
A few things. Had the opportunity to go to the League of Cities meeting. Mr. Fabino was there representing our staff. Interesting meeting, huh? There was about, yeah, it was a little long, but they covered a lot. It was about 80 people present. A couple of things took place there. Division officers were voted in at that meeting. And then the second thing, which I thought was neat, and most of you know this gentleman, they honored Harry Armstrong, mm-hmm. a long-standing City of Clovis council man, and he served in the capacity as mayor, I think, several times. But mm-hmm. 45 years of service for his community, that was just, and he received the plaque, standing ovation, and all that. And mm. Harry's always been humble, and he did a good job.
That's nice.
So that was real nice. Mm-hmm. Then Kevin pointed it out, it was long because they had a presentation on the future of transportation. But some of the notes that I took, and I just wanted to share with you, and you probably know this already, but most of our roads that were built throughout the state, they were built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and a lot of them have been neglected. And you know, just need bad repair, and we're always hurting for repair for our roads, you know, within the city and so forth. But what, you know, they're considering, and of course all politicians will say this, that they're looking at a long-term sustainable, you know, solution to repair our highways, to repair our roads and so forth, and also, you know, spend that money efficient within the state of California. Again, they emphasize that the revenues that are generated for road repair and highways is just not matching the need that we have in our state. And, you know, when you think about it, and I read this the other day, that 50% of the fruits and 50% of the vegetables and 50% of the nuts are produced here in California for the whole United States. Mm-hmm. So what is the pounding that our highways are taking with all these semis taking commerce up and down, all the way to San Diego, up to, you know, up north, you know, to the Bay Area and so forth. So our highways are used a whole lot with heavy loads in comparison to a lot of other states. So I talked to a couple of those guys the other day. Why don't they have a formula where then a state like California would be getting a little bit more money, you know, funded from the federal government, since we do that. That makes too much sense, he said. Mm-hmm. Politicians won't do that. So the idea now, with the part of that presentation, it was long, it's like the idea of road change. And believe it or not, it was a long presentation. They talked about that they would charge the consumer, the driver, based on how many miles we drive. And we go like, wow. So if you live in Reedley, like Russ does, well, he's not going to be driving. But if you're coming in from out of town, like some of our people do, then they're going to be charged. But if, and then I start thinking, like all the people that do our farm labor, all our ranchers that are up and down the valley and stuff like that, again, they're going to be hit hard if and so they go in that direction. So believe it or not, they're pretty serious, because they are going to run a pilot program. And you know who's supporting it? Believe it or not, I said, like, no, I almost fell off my seat. The Truckers Union is supporting that.
They're supporting
it? They're supporting it. And I go like, well, the guy that's driving the truck, he really does, you know, he works for a company. I go, there has to be a catch to this, why they're supporting it, because they're the ones that are putting in a lot of miles. Well, but anyway, that particular pilot program, according to the presenter, is supposed to take place, I guess it's, the way I understood him, it's 2016 through 2017. So I don't know if it's the fiscal year or whatever, but it was a very interesting concept, very interesting presentation, but it gets your attention. And then they went off on another thing where future of transportation, the whole technology piece, if you remember, Kevin, as far as like, you know, I could be using one car when I'm not using it, instead of parking it, you know, in the driveway or wherever you're parking, that someone else would be using that car. I don't know if I like that idea. I said, so sharing an automobile. But the big thing that I went away with too is they talked a little bit about Senate Bill 1077, change how consumers will pay for our roads and our highways.
Is that what this is?
Yeah. So we got to, you know, I think everyone's going to keep an eye on that. But what's the most interesting thing is like it's kind of like the same quagmire or the same situation that we have with the lack of dams and the lack of water storage, because these roads were built way back and we haven't put the money into that. So, and fortunate we haven't had flooding like some states in the Midwest or the East or even Texas, because Texas was in drought for 4 years and within 10 days they got out of it. But look how much flooding took place. So California hasn't done a good job right there. So it was interesting. It was long though. That was probably the longest League of Cities meeting that I've been at. So it was a long presentation. But anyway, it was very resourceful, very educational. The other thing I wanted to publicly, I just wanted to thank the entire staff, Russ and Martha in particular. I know Nicole gave us an email on the unscheduled or surprise visit that they did over at our plant. And, you know, the record keeping and the maintenance and everything, that all the work that people do out there came out, you know, top notch. So publicly, I want to thank the staff, because I know that takes a lot of work. Anyone can prepare. It's like when somebody tells you, I'm going to go visit you, and you do your house cleaning because they're going to come visit you. But it's like when they catch you, you know, unexpected, and go, hey, how's it going? And uninvited, you know, they come in, and that's what they did here. It's like anyone can prepare for a visit, but when they come, an unexpected scheduled, you know, tour or visit, and we can come out the way we did, I mean, that's just remarkable. And, that, you know, kudos to the staff, because if we demonstrate that, then, you know, those people are going away saying, like, hey, you get out to Reedley and you do an unexpected evaluation or visit and it comes out that way. You know, folks are taking pride in their work and they're doing the very best to give the consumer what they deserve. So publicly, again, I want to thank the staff for all your hard work. Then the last thing, I had an opportunity, I was telling Mary earlier today, I had an opportunity, I said, I'm going to go catch the Reedley Selma water polo. I hadn't been in the swimming complex since the dedication, but there's a rivalry between those two communities, Reedley and Selma. Last year, from what I heard Mr. Workington talk in the stands, was Selma beat Reedley the first time around, and then they played for the Valley the second time, and they went triple overtime and really beat them. And then so today they go at it again. They're not in the same league, it was just not. And close game, 9-8. So it's just remarkable. But anyway, really enjoyed the atmosphere there. Good attendance, you know, good community support. And of course, as you all know, it's just a beautiful complex. It's very nice, you know, very well maintained and so forth. So I enjoyed that this evening. And that's all I have, Mayor. Thank you.
Sounds good. Councilmember Fast?
I didn't have really anything. I just was thinking about this 811 thing. And I'm wondering if the monthly little newsletter that we do, if we could maybe include a little blurb in there.
We certainly can. We have in our newsletter in the past, and I know PG&E's been putting it in the monthly bills, mm-hmm. and it's actually mm-hmm. printed on the outside of their envelopes, but we can make sure it goes in the next one. So
I think the more the word gets out, the more we'll be mm-hmm. reaching to those that maybe aren't going to hear it from one or the other. So that's all that I had. Thank you.
Member Tim Bencourt?
I don't have anything except I would like to thank Chris. At Jefferson last week, a mom and a little girl tripped over the sidewalk. It was lifted up. And I didn't see it. Gilbert seen it because he was taking care of the parking lot. And so I called the city, and Chris came right away, and he sprayed it. And there was another section that I showed him at the other end of the sidewalk, and he took care of, put some cones there, and the next day they took care of it. So I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a mom and a little girl. They didn't get hurt, but they did fall both together. So thank you for doing that. That's it.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Councilmember Beck?
I only have one thing. I attended the Five Cities meeting last night. Pleasantly surprised. It seems like I'm picking more information up each time. When EDC has been running the responsible for that, and they're providing us information what actually is being done, so it's a great thing. On top of the note, I guess you're all familiar with Valley Children is partnering up with Adventist Health to build the site in Fowler. Mm-hmm. What a lot of people are not aware of, they're partnering up with several other our cities. In fact, we have two doctors here in Adventist Health that are from Valley Children's. Mm-hmm. So they're reaching out to other communities and trying to use their facilities to put their people into them so your kids can be taken at a closer location so they don't have to take a day or a whole family loses time going up to Madera. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to expand that throughout the valley. They want to make that a Valley Regional Pediatric Center here in the Valley. Mm-hmm. And they're using other doctor's offices and putting their people in those sites. And the way, if you would like to have some information on it, it's Hannah Johnson. And I give the city manager the paperwork I had on it. And I thought, I was not aware we already had doctors in this community out of Valley Children's Hospital, mm-hmm. working right out of Adventist Health here. So it's good to know that they're looking at coming to our kids and not our kids have to go to them. Mm-hmm. So that I thought that was something that really was interesting part of that. It's they're not just zeroing in on one location, they're zeroing in on the Valley.
Talking about regional, I remember years ago there was talk about trying to put a regional facility mm-hmm. around this area. Mm-hmm. For some reason it never worked out, so every city had their own hospitals. But they talked about it a lot mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Well, I have nothing. Turn over to staff.
Sure, a couple things. One, I do want to announce that this morning at the Fresno Board of Supervisors, they did give us a unanimous vote on our Royal Valley building to move forward. This, as you know, is not a final. We weren't doing any final votes on it, but they did give a 5-0 vote to the librarian to go ahead and negotiate with us, and mm-hmm. that we will be the next one on the list. ABC 30 was there. We may get an ABC 30 article on that because they came out to do some shots afterwards with the cameras. Valerie Peroni from the chamber attended and testified, as well as I did as well. The Friends of the Library from Reedley were represented there. So we had good representation from our community, and that really that got called out by both Supervisor Pachigi and Supervisor Mendez, and they appreciated that. So this is good, and our next step is really that the staffs need to get together and talk about some of the finer points, like moving the solar and parking and all of those things. So
They ran it at 4 o'clock.
Oh, they did? Okay.
And they had the building, they were showing off the building, and then they had Valerie, you know, talking to the county board supervisors. So they did run a little.
Good. Yeah. Good. So that occurred this morning, and we'll keep you posted as we move forward on that. Then last week we did have about 50 people come from the city of Merced, the school district up in Merced, along with other Valley cities, including the city of Fowler and Fowler Unified School District, to come and hear about our restorative justice program and the partnership we have with the school district and with MCC. So we had the 50 people in attendance, joined by the staffs of these organizations. So we had a very large group of folks. Great presentations. We spent from 9 till about 1 o'clock talking to them and answering questions and presenting. They walked away very impressed, and I was impressed with our staff who presented. John Swinning in particular is just an exceptional representative of that program and really has a passion for it. So I just wanted to publicly acknowledge the work that he did on that. He is now working very hard to make sure that the delegation that's coming in from Phoenix on Monday, on the 31st, has as good of a presentation as the Merced folks. This will be a much smaller group, and we now, instead of having the city manager and the school district superintendent and some of the more CEO level folks, we have more line level folks coming in so they can actually learn when the rubber hits the road how to do it. So for us, this is a good sign, because that means that the upper echelon has already decided it's a good thing and they want the lower level folks who are going to implement it to be here. So we do have them coming on the 31st, and we'll be picking them up from the airport and bringing them here. Wanted to also let you know that we'll be holding a Reedley University for our staff, and so I wanted to invite you, if you'd like to attend next Friday, on the state's turf rebate program that they are implementing. We expect to get a lot of questions from our community, since we're already getting a lot of questions. And so we're going to educate all of our staff so that everyone here can answer questions if people go through the doors or call on the phone. So if you'd like to come in here, Russ is going to be our presenter at that Reedley U, and it's Friday morning at 8:30.
This Friday?
But this Friday or next Friday? Next Friday, the 7th? The 3rd is next Friday. Tell you what, we'll get you a calendar appointment. How about
the 4th.
That?
If it's next Friday, it's the 4th.
4th? Okay.
Okay.
And that'll be where? Here?
We hold those here in the council chambers. Okay. And then just lastly, just wanted to point out to you, if you didn't see the flyer, that John Navaretti, the county CAO, is retiring in October. So there is a retirement party for him, and if you'd like to go, we've been asked to RSVP. So if you'll let Sylvia or myself know, we'll sign you up for that. So. Any staff?
Just wanted to give you a little update. We do have 7 firefighters up at the Rough Fire in the Hume Lake area. We have one engine, the water tanker, and a battalion chief. And they were assigned a week ago today for a structure protection group to defend the Hume Lake camp. Mm-hmm. And we thought last night they would be demobilizing and coming home today, but this morning they got reassigned. Apparently the fire took a turn towards Hume again from the north.
Oh, really?
And so they are up there doing their job. They did have the opportunity to put out a couple of spot fires earlier in the week. As the fire was approaching Hume Lake, they found some fire, because the fire can spot, you know, up a quarter to a half mile ahead of itself at times. And so they were instrumental in putting out a couple of spot fires in the area that they were located. But everybody's doing fine, and we hope they come home soon.
Good, good.
Mm. I believe that's all from staff, right. Mayor.
Okay. Kevin, do you have something to say? You kind of.
Feel free.
If it's a Cubs, we'll listen.
They're winning 3-0. Just really quick, some time ago we brought before you, and you were kind enough to give us a go-ahead on our pilot program for arts in public places. Ellen and I have been working diligently between all the other projects, trying to get a framework for more permanency framework to move forward. But in the meantime, we did our resident artist, if you will, came back to town, and we got a couple more that are going up and wanted to just share those with you. They are all along Manning Avenue. The one, I think it's the last one, it doesn't do it justice, but it is the Sierras. And that was a little bit of a trial too. One, because it's a circular canvas this time. It's a standpipe, and AID allowed us to do that. They are very, very pleased. So hopefully they will continue to move forward. Again, the program is short in coming to you, but I know that Kaylin, the artist who's been out on the street painting these things, is every time we visit with her, she's always, people are honking at her, stopping to talk to her, and very supportive of what we're trying to do. I think one of our goals that was really important, that was kind of the reason we started this, was because of graffiti. None of the original boxes have been tagged, and we don't anticipate any of the boxes that were just recently done tagged. So that's really a huge step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Right, now that you brought that up, the tagging, and I know we've talked about this a little bit, but what is our, how long do we give a person to take that graffiti off? You know, because I know that Don Manning, you know, a while back when I was going, I saw this graffiti on this one building, and then a week went by, and I saw it again, another week went, so what is 30 days, or?
Here's your answer.
Well, maybe. It depends basically on what the graffiti is. If it's violent in nature, or it's gang-related in nature, typically we try to coordinate with the police department and determine if it is gang-related. If it is on private property, we do tell the property owner that they've got either 24 or 48 hours to get it removed, because it might incite retaliation or something of that effect. If it's a tagging, doesn't really mean anything, somebody just writing their name or something, then we have to make contact with the property owner and try to find a responsible person to deal with the graffiti on their building. And typically they're given 14 days to get it off. So
I know you guys are busy, Chief. I know you're busy. Our police are busy, and it's not. We don't want to do your job, because you guys do a great job. But this, on this particular one, I know it was gang related, because it's a big old 13, you know, from what. But if you folks don't mind, I'll call Nicole. I'll call somebody and say, you know what, this has been up for more than a week now, and we're not. Because if I own the business, and I know if they tagged it, and I think other people feel the same way in the chambers here, you take it off, you know, because it doesn't do anything for your business, you know, something like that. But there's some folks that just kind of let it ride. And I guess this one really stood out because it's right on Manning, main artery.
Okay, so, if we can't see everything, but if you can drop us a note,
okay,
I will take care of it.
Thank you.
I have a question related to that, it's okay, for the chief. I've seen a lot of, oh, that chief, that one. Well, either one.
Both of you.
I'm beginning to see tennis shoes. Before, it was like a way of marking their area. And I didn't see it for a while. Now I'm seeing it again. Yeah, so are they doing it again, or is it just?
I don't think that they're doing it again. I think it's just kids being mean to each other. You know, at times it was, you know, someone would say that it is a indication of, hey, this is my territory, my gang. But, you know, over the years, we've found that it's just more kids just being mean. Uh-huh. You know, I guess don't take your shoes off. Or, you know. But, yeah, it's not really been something that we've seen or identified as anything.
Gang thing anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the good news.
But I've seen it at different places, so, again,
yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah, and they're very difficult to even take down, because a lot of times they are in either electrical lines or something like that. And, you know, I really don't think PG&E or anyone's going to be coming out to take them down anytime soon. So, but it's something we can keep an eye on.
Okay.
Just one more thing. Staff is working on a graffiti ordinance, and we hope to bring it forward soon. It's at the city attorney.
Oh, good, good. So. Great. Great. Kevin, just to say that this has been a positive thing. I've had, when it first started, I had customers that were saying, what's going on with this city, painting all these boxes? Because they thought it was going to be graffiti covered up. And now they're coming back and saying, hey, you guys are doing a great job.
Isn't nice. Good. I was just going to ask Kevin where he got the asbestos for the snow.
Be no other comments. We'll close the meeting, and thank you very much, folks. Inside. Have a nice week.
That's mean, Kevin. Inside. Tell your kids that's asbestos.
Russ.
Okay, I didn't get that joke.
Oh, he told his kids when he's going to Colorado. They said, what's that stuff on the mountains? And he says, asbestos.
Very bad. Bad.
Thank you.
The next Kings River, Upper Kings meeting, I'm going to be gone.
I've been busy.
It's the
15th,
that Wednesday of September.
Well,
she's still having swelling, but
really?
Yeah.
I think it's September 15th.
They told her that 20 to 30 people have that problem.
Call Crystal and ask.
They told her that. Persist or come back. So she may end up having to go back and get a journey again. So.